The weather is warming up and everyone is anxious to get outside. I'm Jill Harrington for Help Save the Next Girl Foundation. While days are bright and nights are warm, we believe you should go out and have fun, but also have a plan. Buddy up. Go with friends. Stay with people you know and trust. Pay attention to your surroundings. These are simple things you can do to make sure that you and your friends enjoy yourselves and stay safe. For more information or to get involved, visit HelpSaveTheNextGirl.com.
Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast, episode 61. The crew today, Will Ogenin in Minneapolis, Chris Bond in Tampa. I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. Notre Dame makes a deal with the ACC for five football games annually, 2026 through 2037. What does it all mean? Well, let's pick that apart for a couple of minutes and talk about it, guys. Lots of things behind the scenes here that make sense for both sides. And I thought about this pretty extensively once the announcement came out and just came to the conclusion this is a win-win for both Notre Dame and the ACC.
Well, you know, it used to be a big deal to have your non-conference opponents 7 or 8 years scheduled in advance because it gave you security. You had your conference schedule and you had your non-conference lined up for almost a half generation, so to speak. And this says something else, though. We're talking about 20 years in advance here. This we've always kind of felt, or I certainly have kind of felt, guys, that Notre Dame was now up to its neck in ACC in every sport, and with five games scheduled a year, they're testing. I always felt that was testing the waters a bit. Well, by inking it to all the way to 2037. This tells me this is a preemptive move to something else bigger coming down the road. This says everything but now for Notre Dame. And whether the Big Ten feels about missing out on all those years, that everybody talked about how that marriage was going to happen, whether that's natural or not. But the ACC has stepped into that void and has, just like a good relationship, they've taken their time, built it up, taking the next step. Pretty soon, you know, Wofford will be popping the question.
That sounds so strange, but I'll go for that.
I'm sure I knew you would.
Of course I'd go for that.
Will is the one I'm not sure about.
I think that, as I said earlier, I think this is a win-win situation. You can't really go wrong. It started out with either four or five games, right? And then at the most, it was going to be five games. Well, there was a lot of question. Is this going to be of the same kind of type of competitive situation for us on a football scale that we're used to? Well, we've proven, yes, it is. We see the ascendancy of the ACC. And Notre Dame playing the ACC, There's just a win-win for everybody. And having that contract with NBC through, I believe it's 2025, is not a bad thing for ACC schools. I think they'd be foolish, if they can re-up that contract, that would be great, to be quite frank about it. It puts Notre Dame out in front of an audience that you can't get on cable. It's on a major network. And right, this is a platform that everybody gets. You don't have to pay extra for it. So that's a plus. Okay, so they have been playing ACC teams in this agreement. And people have become, familiar with ACC. At one time, ACC was the Powder Puff Football Conference. Or at least that's what everybody thought. You still have sports writers who are talking that way. They're foolish. They don't know anything about the ACC. That's just as simple as it comes. So now you start seeing that these ACC teams are competing with the likes of Notre Dame. You know, 1 week, Notre Dame goes up against an ACC team and either loses or has a close game. And then the next week, they go up against somebody like Michigan, or USC, and it's a close game, or they win that game. all of a sudden people start putting, you know, one and one together, and it's not three, it's definitely two. Makes a lot of sense. Will, you have any thoughts on this new inked deal?
We excited for that Labor Day game with Virginia Tech in 2036.
You going to be around then? Because I'm not sure I am.
I don't know, but through the length of this contract, the games for 2037, the players involved in that game, at least the freshmen, won't be a gleam in their parents' eyes for at least another year and a half.
Wow.
Let's put it that way. But as far as what this deal means, I see it as a safety net. If Notre Dame gets to a point where they're consistently like a top-notch team, like they're down a tier now. Let's just be real. They're probably down a tier right now. But if they get up to the point where they are in contention for the playoffs, but not having that conference championship game to fall back on as another quality win, and they get consistently left out of the playoff because of that, then there's that safety net where they might just say, hey, you know what? It's time to break tradition and just join a football conference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Notre Dame brass will call Swofford and be like, okay, we're in. Let's do this.
You know, and I think because nothing else is inked other than ACC, you're right. You've just laid it out. Both of you just really laid it out nicely that if they need to pull the trigger, boom, there it is. It's right there within my reach.
Exactly. They've already met the parents, so yeah. Here we go.
I really like this. And the more I look at the deal that Notre Dame and the ACC have overall, I think it's a plus for the conference, obviously, to have Notre Dame among all the competition of all of the other sports. It's certainly, I think, a plus. It's helped the ACC have that national platform playing Notre Dame and the exposure that comes with it. And you can reverse that. Notre Dame has benefited from that conference play because the sports that are in the ACC, the basketball, the baseball, and on, these are sports that fit right in with the sports program at Notre Dame perfectly and gives them a much better opportunity of moving on into national championship action. It gives them a much broader exposure overall. We'll talk about some of the teams that are moving on in different sports here in just a couple of minutes, and they're right in there. So, you know, this is a good thing overall. I no longer look at this as being, oh, well, Notre Dame's taking advantage of it. At one time I did. Honestly, I looked at it that way. It was, Notre Dame was getting the better end of this deal. Don't look at it that way at all. This is definitely good for both. Let's get into ACC action.
Well, we had some fun with the softball field there, especially the Florida State ladies taking home another softball title. And you have to like their chances. You win your first two games in complete shutouts. You only give up three runs for the entire tournament. So you go into the national tournament. Against the top 11 seeds, they have a 15-6 record, including wins over the top two seeds, especially. And you get a home regional here coming up here in Tallahassee, where they're going to be playing Princeton there on Friday night first. And then they'll probably be playing Jacksonville State out of North Carolina, who's 40-10 and actually is in the top 10 in national batting average. So that'll be an interesting match of the regional there. But I expect them to push on through Oklahoma City. In ACC softball, they are truly lopping the field. And that's a reflection of how well Florida State softball has progressed since the days of Joanne Graff to now. They're getting the recruits. They're out-recruiting their ACC competitors and their regional competitors hand over fist. Girls that are top recruits that are coming out of Alabama, Florida, Tennessee. Florida State calls them to offer them a scholarship. They get that. Florida State gets that girl now. And it's showing up on the field now, where I fully expect a good push all the way to Oklahoma City and a real shot at bringing it home as a national number four seed.
Seminoles have a number four seed in the NCAA tournament. That's not anything to sneeze at. Also from the ACC, North Carolina and Notre Dame will be heading into the NCAAs too. Will, some thoughts on softball?
Can I just say how much of a joke the seeding is here? Like the team has been ranked number two all season in Florida State, you know, blows through, wins the ACC title, gets dropped in the rankings to number four, and ends up with the number four overall seed. Meanwhile, the team that moved up to number two, Minnesota, didn't even get a national seeding. That's just completely messed up. And I fully expect Florida State to be one of the last teams standing. They play some of the best softball of any team in college softball this season. But like, those are the two examples of seeding that just dumbfounded me. Just how they and their reasoning. I don't even buy it either. It's ridiculous. It's like they basically just winged it and didn't even put much logic to it. I completely disagree. I felt Florida State should have stayed number two overall, I believe Minnesota, you know, should have been a seed. Should have been a national seed too. They had the fewest losses in the country, for Christ's sake. But yeah, like I said, Florida State should be a team. Should be one of the big bets to at least make it, you know, to at least the Final Four. But I really think they have a really good shot of winning it all. Actually,
hey, you'll get an argument for me. A walk off winner against the number one seed Florida 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They lost to them earlier in the year, and it was a really close game too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. They split the two game series this year, but yeah, that's, you know, and 1-1. But you know, being a four seed behind, say, Arizona, they clobbered, and Arizona is a great team. They're a Pac-10 champion, which says a lot because Pac-12 guys. I'm dating myself here, but the Pacific Conference traditionally has dominated women's softball. Mm-hmm. That has shifted a bit now to other teams like Florida State and Oklahoma making big runs. But I thank you for saying that, Will, because I feel that way. You said it more eloquently, if that were more fervor, than I would have. So. But it's true. It's absolutely true. The thing is FSU softball, I think some of that will, and I'm not including Minnesota on this, obviously, but some of that is there's a bias against the ACC probably a bit here, I'm noticing, in softball, as there was in football until recently.
Man, like, I understand. Like, yeah, I know, you know, like, Florida State, you know, has clobbered a couple of these teams ahead of them. But, like, it's a one-game sample size. I don't necessarily, you know, I won't always buy into the head-to-head. You just look at what they've accomplished throughout the season, and you tell me that you're just going to drop them for essentially no reason. I don't get it.
What's most recent in somebody's mind is how they're going to react. So you have essentially three opportunities to make an impression. It's like with interviews, jobs, you know, if you're first, you have an opportunity. If you're last, you have an opportunity. If you're somewhere in the middle and you really hit it out of the ballpark, that's your third. That's not as likely. But the last impression that everybody, from the standpoint of the sports writers and the coaches who were voting on ranking, was that three-game series that they stunk up going into the ACC championship. Whether that was fair or not, I don't know. I just looked at that those losses as somewhat of an anomaly, and then the comeback, that surge. Now, granted, the ACC is not that strong in softball. Maybe that's the reason. That even though they came back and just absolutely pounded sand, it still wasn't enough to convince people that maybe they should have been a number two seed. But your argument is, you know, head on. It's valid. It makes all the sense in the world. I would have expected at least a number two seed. So when I was looking when the information came out. I was looking at it and I was going, well, now how far down are they going to drop them? And when they got to the four, I was like, I could kind of deal with that, but it did raise a question in my mind. I think it should raise a question in everybody's mind about why things are done the way they are. And if you can validate it, if you're on the selection committee and you can validate it, if you have some guidelines and, you know, rather than it's just a gut thing or, hey, you're the last people I you know, the last thing I saw you do was this. There's got to be something a little more definitive there. In Minnesota, now, I don't know where they should have been. Maybe they should have been fourth and Florida State should have been second. It's based upon the season, and I don't know enough about Minnesota's season.
They had one of the best seasons of anybody in softball, really. I mean, the Big Ten is kind of like the ACC when it comes to softball. They don't necessarily have the same cachet. They're a little bit down, but they finished 54-3 on the season.
A very convincing record.
I think they know how to do something right.
Yeah.
Just a guess.
Just a hunch.
I'll add something. Yes, there is one person in Tallahassee that is not only okay with the seating, but is very glad. This makes Lonnie Alameda's job as a head coach easy. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing for a great team when you're coaching a great team is keeping them hungry. When you look at you pull them out of the fourth seed, you point at the three teams ahead of them, you beat those guys, those ladies out there, and they're still ahead of you. What are you going to do about it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point.
That's easy coaching.
That's a valid point. A lot of other ACC action going on, including NCAA action. We're going to find out a little more about this NCAA action very soon when they release the bracket. Will, fill us in.
Virginia's first varsity eight locked up the ACC Rowing Championship, which was their eighth overall and 17th in the last 18 years. Took a final effort to get past a very strong performance from Syracuse, and the Cavaliers get the automatic NCAA bid.
That's very interesting that this year, I think the rowing competition in the ACC has been a lot stronger. Duke's new coach has helped turn their program in the right direction. Syracuse definitely coming on a lot stronger. I won't say that Virginia is weaker this year. I don't think that they're really are anywhere close to that. I think they're a very strong team. I think there's just a lot more competition in the ACC, so it'll be interesting to see who gets a bid to go to the NCAAs this year.
Well, I just think the gap is just closed. I don't think Virginia has fallen off at all. You look at they've won 17 of the 18 regattas. If you look at the point totals, the margin of victory over the past several years as opposed to the preceding years, the gap is closed. I mean, Syracuse only lost there by 13. I mean, Syracuse is a rising program. They were already a good program when they came to the ACC a couple years ago. But they've closed the gap on Virginia. So is Duke. Duke is definitely going in the right direction as a program. Actually, outside of, say, maybe Miami, I think all of these teams have made a marked improvement over the last few years. And the conference is definitely getting stronger in this event.
Mm-hmm. Notre Dame.
I remember we talked about Duke last year as being an up and comer in the rowing, and they finished fourth in the championship. So it's certainly not a bad showing once again.
Not at
all.
It's
a very strong fourth, I think. Mm-hmm. But
Notre Dame and Louisville are two other teams that have had a really good ACC season, and it'll be interesting to see. I would say the three that we just pointed out, Syracuse and Duke, and obviously Virginia with the automatic bid there, they will be going to NCAA postseason action. It'll be interesting to see if Notre Dame or Louisville gets picked up there as well. I'm not so sure that's going to happen, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they ranked overall and what that selection committee is looking at. Let's look at something that is a little unusual, doesn't happen all the time. Two teams winning, and it's one school.
Well, Virginia Tech has a total of 13 track and field ACC titles, so it's not unusual for them to win titles, but in the same year, for any school out there, in their own conference, especially a major conference. That's quite a feat, although their ladies were behind all the way up until the very last event, down the 4x400 relay. They were behind 2 points to Florida State women, who were defending champs, by two, but they went ahead and won that event, while Florida State's their counterpart Sarah finished ninth, so that sealed the deal for them there. This was championship caliber performance there, but it was impressive how Virginia Tech closed out their ladies with that 1600 meter relay there. With Courtney Blandon and Arsua Bush there closing out in the anchor there. Florida State, if you watched the tape there, what I was watching earlier today, Florida State was actually third in there, and they faded on their anchor, whereas Virginia Tech was in fourth at that point. You could feel the drama at that point there, because the whole ACC title was on those anchors, and the FSU anchor just stumbled, whereas Virginia Tech's anchor Bush just finished out there, and not only was fourth when she got the relay, she finished and won the race. So it was quite a scene to see, but certainly a great accomplishment in Blacksburg, and it's not one that they're not unaccustomed to. So it's quite a feat to Virginia Tech track and field.
Well, I noticed that Will kissed up a little bit to the Hokies, which is kind of unusual for a Cavs fan. but he got a pat on the back from the AD, so that's a nice thing. Can't go wrong there.
That was me, thank you.
Oh, was it? I thought that was Will.
No, that was Chris.
It was Chris. Well, he sucked up. That's even worse.
Hey, no, it would have been worse if I did it. At least.
Hey, Whit Babcock, if you're listening, man, I appreciate it. Yeah. That case of beer is on its way.
Well, I mean, can you blame him with all the good that's going on in that program right now?
No, it's true. It's true. You know, but yeah, this is another feather in his cap, actually. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of good athletic directors. We're really blessed with some really good athletic directors in this conference. But Wood Babcock, as we said before, is really the cream of the crop, and you have to wonder that some big schools out there have him at the top of the list, and just in case they're looking for an athletic director.
Good luck.
Yeah, indeed.
We've talked about that before.
They'd be fools if they didn't try either.
So. Yeah. Well, I just don't see it happening. We'll talk about some hardball here in a moment, but another hardball is in NCAA action right now, and Will's going to tell us a little more about it.
Yeah, sorry. I had to try not to chuckle there for a second.
You weren't sure where I was headed with that, were you?
Yeah, I know. We're going to talk a little lacrosse here. As Notre Dame, Syracuse, and Duke have all advanced in the NCAA Men's Lacrosse Championship, and Boston College and North Carolina advance on the women's side. So they're a great, again, you know, Boston College, you know, they've been kind of a little under the radar on the women's side. I mentioned a couple of their standout players have had a great seasons, and you know, they're still alive and showing well. And obviously we expected North Carolina to be there because they're, you know, one of the favorites to win the national title. So that's not a huge surprise. They're still in it.
Well, guys, and, you know, as I said earlier when we were talking about Notre Dame, again, Notre Dame right there in the mix with men's, and when they were there with women's lacrosse too. Again, when you start seeing where Notre Dame shows up, they fit so well into the ACC. Chris, we'll have a little softball action here, and it's not on the field. It's on the court.
Well, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, and Duke all advance in the women's NCAA tennis action. And on the men's side, Virginia, Wake Forest, and North Carolina advance here. No surprises there, and certainly keep an eye on Wake Forest. Is looking to see them make another run here in the tournament on the men's side. And I'd like to see Georgia Tech there. I think that Georgia Tech is going to make some big surprises in there on the ladies' side.
Yeah, they've been kind of a surprise. They've been hanging back just a little bit most of the season. North Carolina has been that leader with a couple of top players, both on the single side and the double side. And then on the men's side, Virginia Wake Forest have just absolutely been pounding each other all season long. They've just had this running competition that's just been fantastic. So seeing those teams advance is not surprising. North Carolina, Virginia, Wake Forest. Georgia Tech, good to see them. Duke, not doing too bad there. North Carolina, a little bit of a surprise for me, I think, on the men's side. But, you know, I haven't, you know, they haven't popped up as much as the women have. And I've probably been paying more attention to the women tennis players than I would the men. And you can't fault me for that. So the clock is ticking as ACC baseball enters the home stretch, and now we get into the true hardball. So we'll talk a little bit about ACC baseball here as we get into this last, well, you know, right before the championship. So, and I would expect some surprises. We've talked about this numerous times. It's surprise, surprise, surprise. And you know, on one side of this discussion, we have two teams that are just overwhelming, and that's Louisville and North Carolina. But then again, there are a couple of teams that are just sort of hanging back there that could make all the difference in the ACC championship, and their coaches may be the key. So, Chris, we'll start with you and, you know, we'll look at ACC baseball.
Well, boy, did Louisville deliver a message this past week there, sweeping right through Notre Dame, who only lost five games at home all year, and then headed right down to Clemson. Number seven in the country at the time, we might add, and swept right through that series as well, especially that dramatic 6-4 win on Saturday. But clinching the ACC title there, Brendan McKay actually had a pedestrian week out there for once. He had a great week by most people's standards, but it was kind of average, a little bit tapered off from his better weeks this year. But his team certainly picked up the slack. And as I was saying last week, he's not doing it alone for the Cardinals. And they came into through that week. It was going to be a little bit challenging. Not that Notre Dame was that all that tough an opponent overall. As I said, going in last week, they were 23-23. But they were tough to beat at home. They had beat some good competition up there in South Bend. And Louisville wasn't having anything of it and outscored them by almost 20 runs through the 3 days. Whereas they go to down to Clemson, that's another tough place to win. And certainly Seth Beer actually didn't get a hit off McKay in their confrontation this week. So as we spoke before, that Beer has had his way with McKay in the past, all sudsy and all. But you know, it's Louisville made their statement emphatically this week, but not to be left too far behind. And we know North Carolina isn't. North Carolina, I actually think is a better tournament team than Louisville is, in the sense that they're more consistent batting order 1-9. They have almost a solid weekend rotation, and probably the best closer in the league. So, yeah, I think if I'm an opposing team outside looking in, coming into the NCAA tournament after the conference tournaments, if I had to hedge my bets and split the hairs, I'd almost rather play Louisville. Not that I'm saying that's all that palatable, but North Carolina, they're solid and consistent throughout that whole team. Whereas Louisville has stars, they're not overall that balanced.
Hey, you were talking about North Carolina. They just took 2-3 from Virginia Tech, and on Sunday they beat the Hokies 20-0, and pretty impressive beat down there.
That's another statement. Yeah.
Yep. You were talking about, you know, teams that could surprise. I mean, obviously Wake Forest has been and the rankings for a good chunk of the season. They just took 2-3 from Florida State, winning Sunday 10-9. You know, holding off Florida State. But you know, we're also getting into tournament time, like we said. But so you can never rule out the Cardiac Cavs of Virginia, who for some reason seem to thrive at this time of year. Remember a couple years ago, I mean, even before they won the NCAA championship, years before that, they were doing the same thing, you know, winning a lot of late games with good pitching, timely defense, and very fun, I guess you could say, fundamentally sound baseball. And you know, they've done it. They took 2 of 3 from Miami over the weekend to basically solidify themselves as second place in the Coastal. Still, pretty considerable distance behind the top 3 in the conference, you know, being Carolina and Clemson and Louisville. But one of the we were talking about McKay and his pedestrian outing. Maybe that's the pressure of being the potential number one overall pick getting to him. I say that tongue in cheek, everybody.
Yeah, I knew.
Right, whatever. Yeah.
We knew that. We knew that. In fact, you know, the first thought that went through my head when Chris brought that up was, you know, he's maybe his coach is kind of telling him to kick back just a little bit and save it for the ACC championship. So, I don't know. You know, you can't. You can read all kinds of stuff into that. Yeah, but and everybody has a down day too. So.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, at some point, I mean, you can't. There's going to be a dip in the performance.
Yep, and we say we're coming into the last week of the regular season, and you know, it's going to be some interesting matchups as we head towards the weekend. I mean, you got Florida State taking on Louisville. Maybe Florida State needs a couple wins if there's a chance they could not make the tournament this year. I think they'll probably get in, but. You know, getting a series win over Louisville would come in handy here, I think. Clemson, you know, will take on NC State. NC State, you know, 10 above 500 overall, just a game above 500 in conference. So maybe they could use – the Wolfpack could use a strong showing right here.
Yeah, that's going to be very important. You can count on the people who are in the top echelon of the rankings to be there in postseason. And then you need to go into the ACC and look at who's at 500 and above. So we may actually add one or two teams to potential NCAA postseason action. And that all comes on the strength of the conference, not so much the overall record. Because when you start looking at overall records, the majority of teams there are way over 500. But if you look at the in-conference and the fact that there's so many ranked teams, that starts giving teams that may be hovering around 500 in-conference much more cred with a selection committee. They're going to look at teams that are, you know, hovering at 500, 600, and maybe they're not ranked, but they're going to say, hey, look at who they're playing. This is a tough conference. It's not just one or two ranked teams, but there's multiple ranked teams, and they're going up against these guys on a regular basis. And then they're going to look at the performance. How close was it? You know, you get a 20-0 loss on a regular basis, like, you know, just occurred this past weekend. That's not going to do you any good, but if you're playing games like 10-9 or 3-2 or whatever – definitely going to add to your RPI. So those are things we need to look at.
Showing you can win those close games means a lot.
Yes, it does, because those are the types of games that baseball is maybe more of a what if sport than most. There's so many variables to deal with there. You can start with the fact that a pitcher is not a machine and is not always going to be on, and you have different surfaces, you know, different weather conditions, on and on. I mean, there's so many variables to deal with there.
Well, look at, if you look at the conference standings, who's at 500 or conference? I'm looking at Louisville, Wake Forest, Clemson, and NC State. In the Atlantic Division, mm-hmm. and in the Coastal, you have UNC, Virginia, and Miami at 13-13.
Right.
Miami's not going to get in, though, an overall record of 25-26. Are they going to get in? Are they not?
I don't know. They're one of those teams that could be a bubble.
Don't get in.
Those are the types of teams that could be a bubble, and it depends on what their performance has been this season. I'd say Miami doesn't, because I just don't see enough wins that were critical, or close games that were critical, that made any kind of difference.
Now, here's who I left out. Here's who I left out. Florida State is 12-14 in conference, but they're 33-20 overall. Are they in?
Probably.
They got to do some work in the ACC tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to nail down a couple big wins. Louisville would certainly count.
Yeah. If they can at least take 2 out of 3, maybe sweep, then yeah. You know, if they can, if they sweep them, they'll be above 500. So yeah, that'd probably put them in.
I think if you finish in the top 4 of the ACC championship, then you get a bid. Mm-hmm. No matter, almost no matter who you are.
So almost gets into the top 4.
So Miami, well, this is where Miami could turn things around, but I don't see it happening. Right. And of course, I don't see the example you just threw out there either. But, you know, I mean, but you never know. You never know. No. And I mean, how are you going to, you're going to have to look at the overall, but man, that championship performance. And I think that they've set up the ACC championship to be even more of a solidifying force for the selection committee when it comes down to choosing teams out of the ACC.
Right now, I say 5 teams are locks to be in, with Louisville, Wake, Clemson, North Carolina, and Virginia. And I think there are teams that are there, like NC State, Florida State, for example, who are probably right there on the bubble, who could definitely get in with some impressive work in come tournament time.
If Florida State gets into the top 4, they go. If NC State gets into the top 4, they go. I think my gut's telling me that Florida State's going to get an invite one way or the other. I mean, you have to look at people's history too.
Yeah,
that's one of the things that they're going to look at what you've done in the past and how you've performed, and sometimes that it just overwhelms the overall picture that you're looking at this season. Florida State is going to pull an audience, is going to pull ratings, and it just has a history that will deliver for you if you're,
Well, yeah, I mean, this is since Mike Martin took over in 78. This is the first year they did not win 40 games. This is the first year. And that is streak credentials as much as anybody out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to our conversation last week with them and me bringing up that SEC football treatment. And obviously I meant it, in a positive light, because they have we see the SEC football being, put on such a pedestal. And they say the same thing, to some extent with Florida State. If they do that, then yeah, they're definitely going to get in just because of that history.
Sure. Now, is that fair? Let's go back to this the softball question that we had earlier.
Absolutely not. And I'll be the first to tell you that.
So,
not fair.
You know, is this our selection committee's fair? Period.
Probably not always.
Not. even at their best, they can't be totally fair. Right. They can't.
Okay. So they're looking at a lot of variables here that we as fans probably aren't even considering, or maybe we discount. And I still think it's a money-driven thing. You've talked about this before, Chris, about how money-driven things are in the NCAA. Come on, folks. It really is. So who's going to pull in, fans? Who's going to pull in audience? Florida State, If I had my choice between Florida State and NC State, and NC State had a slightly better record, but they're both basically where they are right now from the standpoint of they're not doing real well in the ACC, I'm going with the Seminoles. Sorry. Sorry, guys down there in Raleigh. Yeah. I mean, I'm going with I'm going with the audience, and I'm going with a fan base that's supportive.
Well, let's be frank here. It's all about ratings. The money the NCAA makes is off the contracts they make with the networks. The networks want to have good ratings for their advertisers. Who calls the shots on this? You cannot tell me that ESPN doesn't go in and say, these bubble teams right here, these are the ones that we want you to get in.
Mm-hmm.
These are the ones.
I'm sure of it.
If you want to find the answer to almost every question, just go look for the bottom line.
Now, here's something that you've brought up in the past, too. You've got a pretty solid alumni base there at FSU. Right?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Well, absolutely.
Yeah, and I, you know, I just can't say the same thing about NC State.
No, really, and they can't. Don't have the baseball history either.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're sitting there at ESPN, let's say, and you're going, who would I rather have? Come on.
Yeah, look who's holding all the cards in this question.
Yep. Yep. So that's why I'm saying I think Florida State gets a bid. I may be totally off base here, but man, I'm telling you, I'd go for both teams getting in, quite frankly. I don't think they're going to go all the way, but I think they certainly would give some great performances, at least for one game.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. They both got in the top four. That would definitely put the committee put on their thinking caps a bit to find one or two other teams that we're going to get in that probably aren't at that point.
Mm-hmm.
While we're talking here, I actually pulled up a bracketology from a website called College Sports Madness, and they actually have a Florida State in the tournament and an NC State out as of right now.
Mm-hmm.
This was updated a week ago.
Okay. Well, see, brilliant people over there. They agree with us.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Right.
Righto. Righto.
Stealing our ideas. Shame on them.
Gee whiz. All right. We'll see where things head with baseball. We'll be talking about that in the next episode, by the way. NFL noteworthy stuff. You guys got anything about some ACC players that maybe we should know? Something recent, maybe?
Yeah, Jarrod Evans has already been waived by the Philadelphia Eagles. He actually suffered an injury during a rookie camp, and they actually waived him afterwards. So.
Wow.
His tumultuous has been a rough few weeks for him. Let's just say that.
That's a tough way to get started on your next career, your next step in life.
Mm-hmm. UPS is hiring.
I don't think that you know, you release somebody over something that, well, I don't know how simple it was. It could have been something a little more extensive than just a basic injury, you know. He didn't have much promise to begin with in camp. So I guess he's going to have to start looking around. He and his agent will have to look. Next option, maybe some NFL squads, but most likely Canadian Football League, you think?
I mean, we still have two months really until training camp begins. So there's still, you know, plenty of time to try to figure this out.
Right. Well, not just for Evans, but for a lot of guys.
That's being optimistic, I think. And that's fine. I'm all for being optimistic. I'm a glass half full type of guy anyway. I'd rather it be all the way full, like Chris. and I'm alluding to Chris being full of it. So that
beer, that is. It means beer. It means beer.
But
preferably a porter.
I just don't think that Evans is an NFL quality player. That's where I'm coming down on this, and I just don't think he's going to pick up with anybody. If he does, congratulations, you've proven me wrong. Not that I really matter to you, but it's all about you. If you're going to go out there and you want to be a part of a team, you need to work your rear end off, and it's a whole different ball game at the NFL level.
This move tells me it's entirely mental, and what I mean mental, it's not his physical ability that was ever in question. Yeah, the talk about his dedication or lack thereof to academics, and there were, and you know, you talk with other bloggers, there were alluding to points where there were parts of the playbook Fuente had to leave out of the game because Evans just couldn't pick up parts of those playbooks. Those parts of the playbook, excuse me. But, you know, it alludes to the same problem that Jimbo Fisher had back when he had E.J. Manuel. Great ability, but Fisher made no bones about it. There was half of the playbook he had to throw out because Manuel just couldn't pick up on those particular plays. Whereas in Fuente, there's an allusion to it that, you know, Evans wasn't picking up everything that was in the playbook. He was played a quarterback because he was the best available on the roster. And he certainly did play well. We owned on that on the on-the-field product from Gerard Evans was very, very good. But to see the Eagles take an athlete like him and pick him up and then turn right back around and let him go, this doesn't tell me anything, any doubts about his physical ability. Yep. It's all between the years, and there is no more mental position than quarterback.
Let me just say this to all these young men and women, and this goes more for the guys. And I'm not. This isn't stereotyping. Don't be a box of rocks. That education means more to you than you'll ever, ever imagine when you're 9, 10, 12, 15 years old and you think you have the world by the tail and you're not studying. You're not exercising the most important brain that you have, or the muscle that you have, and that's your brain, man. It will put you into a really bad situation. You can be the star all the way through school, all through high school, and even make it into college and be the star. But if you don't have the know-how, the brains, the savvy to handle it at the NFL level, poof, gone. Then what are you going to do? What are you going to fall back on to maintain that level of excitement and prestige and to generate money? It's going to be that brain. Mm-hmm. Gosh sakes, kids, start studying in school. Man, I'm telling you, it is going to take you much further in life and make you a much happier person long term by exercising your brain than it ever will to be out running on the field. I guarantee it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a real quick story from way back in the day when Bear Bryant was recruiting John Hanna, who is a tackle, offensive tackle, eventually had a Hall of Fame career with the New England Patriots back in the 80s. He told him when he was recruiting him, son, you can come to Alabama and you can play. If you just want to play football, you can just play football. If you want to play football and get an education, you can do that too. Whatever you decide to do, 20 years from now, don't come back to me crying because you're digging ditches. So there's a reality to that you are getting a free pass. There is a real push for trying to get education paid for the population, which personally I am for. I'm sorry to get a little political here, but a well-educated population is a stronger population. When the cost of tuition is so far out of reach for so many people who really want it so bad, and to see athletes who are giving this to them on a silver platter, not that I'm saying that's nearly enough for what they give out for what they make from the NCAA makes from them, but I'm just saying it's there. Take advantage of it. Make yourself a better person while you're playing a game you love.
Got it. Well, the ACC has done right by the WNBA as the season starts. More than a fair share of players coming out of the conference are filling team rosters. That's a good thing. A lot of great players in there. Some interesting.
I like how you did that WNBA, kind of like in private parts. It's like WNBC. You're like WNBA.
I love that movie.
That's a great movie.
Boy.
Love that movie. Oh gosh,
we're really getting off the chain here.
interesting pickups by ACC football teams. Chris, you shared a note about Virginia Tech with Will and I last week. So that'll be a fun summer. Seems like some really hardcore recruiting going on across the ACC.
Well, for instance, you know, Virginia Tech had landed a 4-star Pennsylvania wide receiver with Darryl Simmons on this past Sunday, just yesterday, actually. He chose the Hokies over Penn State and North Carolina, which I'm sure Larry Fedora is scratching his head over that one. But, Justin Fuente is, with landing Simmons and a few other four-star recruits here coming up here, he's getting a lot of visits getting scheduled here for the fall coming up. And these are bigger recruits than Beamer ever dreamed of in some sense. There are 6 4-star recruits that he's got coming for visits already scheduled this fall. That's on top of the Simmons commitment right there. So this is something we're going to keep an eye on here. But Fuente really got people's attention there in Blacksburg. Particularly, he's really connecting, and it's not easy trying to sell to a 16, 17, 8-year-old, 18-year-old and keep their attention. You know, their attention spans aren't that big to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Virginia Tech, well, people know who they are. It's not, say, getting by Florida State or Clemson in the conference, but he's getting their attention. He's at least getting the visits. And if he just gets on some of those, it's really going to pay off here in the coming years. So, the ACC, we've seen guys the last 2 years, the race is getting tighter on FSU and Clemson. Look, we had 10 bowl teams. The proof is in the pudding there. So Fuente coming into the league is only making it that much tougher.
Hey, Chris, if Fedora is scratching his head over Fuente getting all these top-notch recruits over him, maybe he should start playing some of his top-quality players more often.
Yeah, oh, well, you know, running backs particularly.
Yeah,
you know?
Just saying.
He's probably too busy double-fisting Red Bulls anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and ripping all the running plays out of his playbook.
Yeah. You know, to talk about recruiting for just a second here, I've got the 24/7 Sports rankings up in front of me here. You just look at just how stacked it is with ACC teams. Granted, I know we're just a little under 9 months until signing day, but Miami's currently sitting at number one. Like, mm-hmm. When was the last time Miami was number one in the rankings in anything football-related? It's
almost a generation ago.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Like, I don't expect this to stay long-term because, you know, Alabama ain't even up there that high in the rankings right now, so you know this is a way-too-early thing.
But seeing
the quality, you know, I mean, if you want to count Notre Dame, you know, they're number five, Clemson's number six, Florida State's number seven. And you even look at, you know, some of the, you know, Duke's is 20th right now. You know, they're having a really strong start to recruiting. Virginia Tech's at 27, and you just go on. There's a lot of the ACC right now is currently right around in the top 40 in the rankings. It shows you the ACC's getting a little more respect.
Well, guess what?
Nationally.
Guess what?
That happens when you win a national title.
ACC is the flavor of the month, man. It's all of a sudden, all of these folks who have no clue, had no clue, didn't know what they're talking about, downplayed the ACC forever. Suddenly, it's the flavor of the month.
Well, to put it into terms right now, Alabama, as of this moment, is 48th in the rankings currently, and that's pretty. That would be almost dead last in the ACC right now.
Let's get some perspective here. Mm-hmm. A lot of your big recruits, your five-star recruits, don't commit to much later in the year.
I know, but it's just as kind of fun to look at. Like, right now.
Right now, yeah. If signing day was today.
Yeah, let's be real here. Kansas, the lowly Kansas Jayhawks are like 23rd in the ranking. So that just shows you just how much it means right now. But we all know, you know, wait till September, and I think things will really start to change then.
But there is something to say, though. Remember, in this past bowl season, you had 10 ACC teams in there. That means when you look at how many bowls there were, you do the calculations, about every third bowl game a kid was watching, he was watching an ACC school.
Can't beat it. Can't beat it, man. That just so pays off for you long term as a conference and as schools. You know, it just makes it so much easier to recruit when you're getting that kind of exposure. And the first thing we talked about today, Notre Dame, and how important that is to the exposure and building up of the ACC's football conference. Guys, we're running out of time rapidly. Final thoughts, we'll go with Will.
Not a whole lot for me. And actually, I made it out to made a new trip to a brewery this week. I was actually up at a housewarming party up in the North Metro, and on my way, I stopped into the suburb of Robbinsdale, home to two famous heel wrestlers, Kurt Hennig and Ravishing Rick Rude. But there was a brewery there called Wicked Wort Brewing that I stopped in and had their Kolsch. I've been on a huge Kolsch kick lately. Obviously, it's one of my favorite favorite beers that Bald Man makes is their Kolsch. So I stopped and had a Kolsch from there, which was just pretty good. And Had last night on Sunday on for Mother's Day, I went out with my mother-in-law and my grandmother-in-law, who will be 91 here in a couple of months. So shout out to Bubby. Had a call from the Free House, which is a little brew pub in Minneapolis as well. So had some pretty good beers lately.
Yeah, I had a good time over the weekend. I went and saw a couple shows downtown. I met up with my mother and for Mother's Day, and took care of Mama Bond, made sure she had a very good day. I know she was appreciated by all three of her kids. And as far as the beer side, though, at home there, I've been, you talk about a kick, Will. I've been on a little Mexican beer kick lately. And lately, I've been going through one of my favorites, which is Modelo, called a Negra. That's a lager there that's so tasty, so rich, and just a little squeeze of lime in there is just dead solid, perfect. Especially with some salt around the rim of the glass. Very nice that we had over here, and then had that with tonight with some prime rib right on the grill tonight before the podcast with some sweet potato and butter and cinnamon on there. It was perfect.
Well, one last note for everyone. Check out accnation.net. That's our website. And if you'd like to drop us a line, simply click on the contact link there on the website. It's or you can send it to us, contact at accnation.net. Contact at accnation.net. And send us a note, drop a line, got a question, anything you'd like to ask us, or maybe some topics you'd like for us to discuss, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we'd definitely love some more topics as we had in the summertime.
Yeah, gets a little thin as the summer kicks in, but mm-hmm. We'll talk more a little bit about beer, I think, when the weather gets a little warmer.
Yeah. Well, find yourself a nice pilsner and keep popping the ideas.
There you go. Uh-huh. For Will Ogenen and Chris Bond, I'm Jim Quist.
Cool. Bond, yeah.